He had some horrible things done to him, just like in the...
Yeah. So... I don't think we're going to finish the story this week. I had intended to, but we're going. We had a
small diversion,
which is fine. But I'm going to. I'm going to try to bring the story of Shimshon so we can conclude our study of Shimshon by next week. That's my goal, and then we'll figure out where we go from there. We left off. Perek Tet Zayin, Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Vayochazuhu plishtim vayinaklu et einav. Shimshon has fallen. They grabbed him. They captured him. The first thing they did was they blinded him. That's an interesting question. Why? We'll see a little bit later in the story a certain symbolism to it. Certainly not the symbolism that they had intended.
He was enticed by his eyes.
So that Chazal saw it as a kind of measure for measure punishment for the fact that his eyes led him astray, and that's a second component of it certainly. I think it may have been part of their way of demonstrating his weakness and the power over him. Vayaridu oto azata. They took him down to Aza, and if you remember, we saw a number of times the Chazal that said. Trilat kil kulo ba'aza, l'chein nilka ba'aza, that his downfall starts in Aza with the story of the Zona, and therefore, when he's captured, the first place they take him to is Aza. Vayasru benuchushtaim, they bind him in iron. Vayhi tochen bevet ha'asurim, and they put him up again, they attach him to the mill, and they have him grinding in the wheat in the mill like a donkey. And that's probably very typical of how they dealt with captive prisoners. You know, you blind them and then you chain them up to the mill and you just force them to walk around in circles all day long. And we have this very strange verse at the end of the paragraph. Vayachal sa'ar roshol tzameach kasher gulach. His hair began to grow as it was shaven. Meaning, here he is in prison, but blind, forced to mill all day long like a donkey. And the last thing we hear about this, about the last image we have of Shimshon, is he's there in iron, destroyed, broken, imprisoned, and his hair begins to grow. And you don't know where that leads you or what that message is. It's just leaves you there hanging with this. That's what you've got. His hair begins to grow. Paragraph break. Pause. Right. Just blank. And then, therefore, okay, so we'll see what this significance of the hair beginning to grow. It's a foreshadowing. It could be many things. Right? But certainly, the one thing it's not is insignificant.
The writer will get an A+.
Certainly, one thing, it's not as insignificant. Pasuk Chav Gimel. V'sarnei plishtim ne'esu lizbach zevach gadol l'dagon Eloheihem. All the governors of plishtim, all the heads of the cities, all the leaders, they gathered together for a big feast, festival, sacrificial service to Dagon. Now, Dagon is the deity of the Plishtim. It's the first time he's mentioned in the story. It's a interesting deity because Dagon comes from the word Dagan.
Not from Dag,
from Dag. Right? It was a fish head deity. Okay. From Dag. And the Plishtim worshipped the god of the seas, the fish. Why?
Well, they were on the coast.
Number one, they were on the coast. And number two, they were
Must have been fishermen.
They were fishermen. They were seafarers.
Yeah.
Right? Do you remember?
That people that came across.
That's right. They were the ones who came out from the Plishtim were the ones who came out from Crete, from Cyprus. They were warriors, fishermen, Viking style. They always have this image of the Vikings as kind of a the image of what the Plishtim were like. So they came over the sea. They came in ships. They were so it makes sense that their deity. It's an interesting window into the world of ancient idolatries, where they weren't just haphazard worship stick and stone. They essentially deities were whatever source of livelihood one had, whatever was source of life was, that's what they turned into a deity. So in Egypt it was the Nile, because that's where their water came from. In Canaan it was Baal, because it was the god of rain, and their sustenance came from the rain. The Plishtim worshipped the god of the seas, because their sustenance came from fish, from the sea. So the notion of idolatry was to look for what was your source of life, and that essentially became deified over the course of time. It's an interesting window into the world of Avodah Zarah. Nonetheless, they gathered together to make this great zevach gadol to Dagon Elohim ulisimcha, to rejoice. What's the celebration about? Vayomru Natan Eloheinu biyadenu et Shimshon oyveinu. It even has this, sounds like a shira. Right, even has, right? God has given into our hands our enemy Shimshon. Natan Eloheinu biyadenu et Shimshon oyveinu. Vayiru oto ha'am, they saw him. Vayihallelu et Elohim, they offered praise to their God, or gods. Ki yomru, second time, Natan Eloheinu biyadenu et oyveinu. There's that song again. Our God has given our enemy into our hands. Ve'et machriv arzenu, the one who has been destroying our land. Vashir hirbat chalaleinu, and the one who has increased our casualties. Our chalalim. All of this God has given into our hands. Vahi kitov libam. Vayamru kir'u l'shimshon v'sachek lanu. In the midst of all of this revelry and celebration, they called out and they said, "Let's bring Shimshon, v'sachek banu, lanu." What is v'sachek lanu? Happy.
Play
with him.
Play with
him. Yeah, he'll amuse us. He'll make sport of us. We'll make sport of him. He'll be the subject of our entertainment. Vayikru l'Shimshon mibet ha'asurim. Called him out from this jail where he was milling the grain. Vayitzachek lifnehem, and Vayitzachek means to laugh, but here it means they made sport of him. He was the subject of their laughter. Vayitzachek lifnehem. V'yamidu oto ben amudim, they stood in between the two posts. V'yomer Shimshon el hanar machazik biyado. He has this nar who's holding him because he's blind, so he can't walk. So he has obviously a lad walking him, guiding him. Hanicha oti, leave me, v'hamisheni et ha'amudim. Let me feel the pillars around me. Asher abayit nachon alehem, the pillars upon which the house stands, is supported, the two support pillars. V'esha'en alehem, that I may lean on them. Why does he add those two words, v'she'en alehem?
Give us a hint of what's going
to
happen.
He's like weak. They
want
him to know that he's weak.
Right, he's weak.
Thank you.
In other words, that's exactly. He's saying to the Na'ar, give me lean me against the two support pillars of this complex. Now, you're the Na'ar. Last thing you want to do is put a Shimshon on the support complex of this entire building. But he says to them, I need a place to lean. Right? You're not going to stand here. I'm not going to lean on you. So let me lean against the pillars. That's essentially what he's saying to them. V'abayit maleh ha'anashim v'hanashim, the place was filled men, women, v'shama kos aranei plishtim, and all of the leaders of the plishtim, v'al hagag kishloshet alafim ish, the roof, another 3,000 people, shloshet alafim ish v'isha, haroim bishok shimshon. All of these people watching,
they're making fun of him
and making fun of Shimshon. Vayikra Shimshon el Hashem vayomar. As Hashem Elokim, zochreinina, vechazkeinina, ach hapam hazeh Elokim, v'inakma nakamachat mishte enai miplishtim. A very powerful verse. Vayikra Shimshon el Hashem. First of all, it's the second time we find Shimshon engaged in prayer. Once was after the story of the Lehi, and now here. And it's a very beautiful prayer. It's a very emotional tefillah. Concise but emotional. He uses the word na twice. Zochreini na, remember me, I beg you. Chazkeini na, strengthen me, a.k.a. give me back my strength. Achapamaze, just this once. He knows he's finished. Ha'elokim. Ve'inakma nakamachat mishte enai. So that I may avenge once and for all my two eyes from the plishtim. Vayilpot Shimshon et shnei ha'amodim atavach, amodei atavach. Shimshon pushed against the two pillars. Asher bayit nachon alehem. Vayisamech alehem. He strengthened himself against the two pillars. He leaned against them. He pushed against them. Echad bimno v'echad bismalo. Picture in the mind all those images about Shimshon with the two pillars pushing like this and the columns falling. Just picturing what it looks like. Vayomer Shimshon. Tamot nafshi im plishtim. I will die with the plishtim. Vayet bekoach, pushed with strength. Vayipol abayit al haslanim ve'al kol ha'am asher bo. And the house collapsed. On top of the Sinai plishtim. On top of the people. On top. Thousands upon thousands. Think about it for a moment. How many people were in this stadium?
3,000.
3,000 were on the roof.
That was just
3,000 were on the roof. All the Sanim, all the Svenim, all of the leaders, all of this was thousands upon thousands.
Vayu ha-metim asher hemit b'moto rabim me'asher hemit b'chayav.
Killed more people in his death than he killed in his entire life put together.
Wow.
And that's the end of the story. Except for one postscript verse, Vayerdu Echav, the whole Beit Avihu, his father's house, his brethren, they all came down, Vayisu Oto, and they picked him up. They took out Shimshon from the rubble. Vayalu, they brought him back up, Vayikberu Oto, and they buried him. Ben Tzora Uven Eshtao, Bekever Manoach Aviv. In his hometown between Tzorah and Eshtaol and the kever of his fathers, Vahu Shafat et Yisrael Asrim Shana. There's that conclusion verse that we had once before that I showed you, that he had judged Israel for 20 years. Same 20 years, according to the way we understood it, the same 20 years as before. But it finishes, correct, but it finishes his story with a reference to the fact that he had been the judge of Israel for 20 years, rather than just this kind of tragedy of his death. As it finishes all the Shoftim, Yishpot et Yisrael, after the end of his life, he judges of four. Right, but this was really a conclusion to Shoftim. So there's a lot here.
One of the interesting questions is, why did God at that point give him back enough strength? I mean, they foreshadowed it for us to give him with the hair. You know, you knew something was going to happen because he got his hair back. Some of it, but why at this point, or did Hashem want all these people to die? I don't know.
Right. So why does Hashem give him back his strength? This is a good question, especially after he took it away from him because he had given up his nesiut. So that's a powerful question, one that we have to
we
will address.
Bit like in the story, like with
you know, oh my gosh, when
senior
Teshuva, I mean, it's like the one that Yonah, okay. Yonah, and you know, like he finally realizes that maybe he made a mistake, and he prays to God. And
yeah, for Shimshon, there's certainly a moment of retrospect of on his life. And you see it in his tefillah. His tefillah is really powerful. Zochreini na v'chazkeini na. Ach ha'pam hazot ha'elokim.
Justice.
He knows it's the end. He knows that he's made a huge mistake, but one last chance to rectify it. One last chance to
do. It's revenge, though.
Right? There's a personal vengeance involved.
B'nachman nachama kamachat mishtei enai. Partial fulfillment of what his mission actually was.
Why is it a partial fulfillment of his mission?
Well, wasn't he supposed to get the plishtim? He was supposed to fight against the plishtim.
He's been doing that his whole life, but okay, but he's...
But it sort of puts a cap on it, I think.
There's a greater devastation here.
It's also, I don't know, even though I missed several classes, so I may not get to have it all straight in my head, but it seemed to me that his mission, you know, he sort of, it was like, when he was fighting the plishtim throughout the rest of his career, it seemed like scattershot. It didn't seem like a plan.
That's correct. It was scattershot. There was no plan. This really is his only premeditated right. attack on the plishtim. Remember, every other attack that we've seen him engage in has always been in response to something that went wrong with relation to one of his wives or women. Something always in response to the Shatimnit, the first time, the second time, the Zonanaza, the Lila. It's always in response to something related to his adventures. To his adventures. Here, this is premeditated.
God let him kill. Look at the numbers he was able to.
Well, correct. I mean, these were the enemy of the Jewish people, so it was no surprise. On the contrary. The anticipation or the expectation was that he would have led an army and done far more damage. But that, unfortunately, never came to fruition. But he certainly... It also ends with Shimshon sort of, in a sense, being rehabilitated. You know, the image of Shimshon... Well, he's powerful, and he's successful against the plishtim in this regard. But then, after he dies, and after the story is over, there's this concluding pasuk which kind of rehabilitates his whole image. They go down; his family goes down. You know, it's a family that would have rejected him. I mean, although it's his father's house, not his mother's house. But okay, still, you know, how much connection does he have with his family? Where do we feel Manoach was mentioned at the beginning of the story? Other than the marriage with Timnah, we haven't seen him or his mother or his brethren in the story since. Suddenly his brothers are coming down to Aza yeah. to take him out of the rubble, to bring him back to Tzorah Neshta'ol, to give him a full burial with honors, Bekever Manoach Aviv.
But don't you think that's a result of what he did, the image of all of these people dying? So they're making him their hero.
He is their hero. He is the hero, although in his lifetime he was far less the hero. It's interesting perspective.
He was an only child, right? I mean, his right. brothers, is that...
I assume they're half-brothers.
Oh, I thought it was his brother Israel.
It could be brothers, kinsmen, it could be his brothers yeah. from... it says, Kol Beit Avihu. Uh-huh. So, it could be cousins, it could be half-brothers.
Is there any significance to... It says that when he's praying to God, he says to take vengeance for one of my two eyes.
No, one vengeance again for my two eyes. Nekam achat mishte enai. One act of vengeance for both eyes.
Here it also translates yeah. it wrong.
How does it translate it?
Yeah, that's why I was like...
There may be a vent on the plishtim for one of my two eyes. That's very
what?
Different. Yes, yeah, that's what it says in here. I looked
also,
at it twice.
It's
really, weird. It's really a weird translation.
That is weird.
Yeah.
Can be a mikro oktolot. In other words, it might be in the back. There should be one
like
of those
it's like you're doing it only for one eye, but not both eyes. You just say it. It's a very strange.
You want those pink and red books?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just the book of the Mefarshim in it. That is weird.
I mean, every single, yeah, I mean, I thought it was a very strange translation. Take revenge on the Philistines, if only for one of my two eyes.
Which it could be. I would have translated it as one act of vengeance for my two eyes. Nekamachat.
That's not what it says.
And it's even hyphenated. Nekamachat.
Mm-hmm. What about that one?
What is that?
That's
the big one?
Right?
That's what I have. That's
no, no, no. Oh, the translation? No, that's you won't find it. If there's a Das Mikvah, then Das Mikvah will have it also.
Also, I've never seen
the Das Mikvah.
Translation
one?
Or the
Das?
It's a place where it's
a clear.
It's interesting. The Mefarshim also translate it that way. No, not all of them. Mitzurah, Rashi translates it that way. Schar ayin hashenit hanachli l'olam haba. One vengeance once against one eye, the other eye for olam haba. The Radak also translates it that. Samuch nakam achat mishte enai, klamar me'achat mishte enai, inakem mehem. However, Mitzvah Tovi translates it, Od pam achat inkom mi plishtim, amash nakru shte enai.
For both.
One last time I will seek vengeance for what they did to my two eyes. So it ends up being a machlokat mefarshim, which I actually, if I was to translate it, I would have followed the Mitzvah Tovi. I think that actually.
One for both, you said.
Yeah, one vengeance for both eyes. It's an interesting translation. Nakom. One of my eyes. But that's.
Keep it here?
You can. The other comment that I wanted to show you in the Radak is we'll start with that. Is the sense of going back to this verse at the end of Pasuk Chavbet, which describes his hair having been, her hair restarting to grow.
Well, you should know when you read that sentence that something else was going to happen.
Right. Or that there's, so that's the question of what that sentence means. So take a look, for example, the Radak says the following. V'yatam ha-sipur bezeh. This is on the Radak on this pasuk. V'yachas ha-arasho. V'yatam ha-sipur bezeh. The reason for this story, the reason for telling us that his hair has started to grow again, is to indicate to us that which is, as Adina says, foreshadowing that which will come later, where Shimshon says to the lad, set me up against the pillars so that I can take down the pillars. Shechashav Shimshon sheyashuv lo kocho im sa'aro. Shimshon thought that he would be able to regain his strength with his hair. V'amar la'na'ar sheyemisheu et ha'amudim. So therefore he told the na'ar they should help him feel where the pillars are. Ki chashav kivan she'tzamach rosho zehaya sibat hashavat kocho elav. Since his hair began to grow, that would be the reason for the restoration of his strength. Be'ezer Elokim, of course, with God's help. So, says the Radak, that's precisely how this story came about. Because his hair started to grow again, Shimshon saw that as a sign that, oh, his strength is going to come back to him. And so now all he needs is to set up with the pillars, offer this little prayer, and we're in business.
But
But he mentions Hashem here, too.
Yeah, he's talking to Hashem. He's a tefillah to Hashem.
But that's a difference also.
Okay, but still, I mean, it's Nazir Elokim. You can't ignore the fact that Nazir Elokim. I just want to see what the Radak says on so you understand what the Radak is suggesting. That why does Shimshon devise this plan to bring the building down and to ask God to return his strength to him? He sees this all as part of
the whole scene.
Part of the whole story of his hair being going back. He gave up his, he told Delilah that his hair, if you cut his hair, he'll lose his strength. He understood, therefore, that his nizirut and his strength are interconnected. You see that. The moment his hair starts to grow again, so he says, you see,
his strength will
come back. So he just waits for that opportunity to come along and say, now it's the time to bring the house down. That's the Radak's understanding of the hair growth. However, I think that there's a challenge to this Radak. What's the challenge? What's the challenge? In other words, what's the Radak saying? The Radak is saying that because he saw his hair growing, he understood that his strength was going to come back to him, and therefore he sets up this moment where he can bring the pillars of the house down because that's his strength restored because his hair grew back.
You know,
tamot nafshim plishtim. Tamot nafshim plishtim. I will die with the plishtim. Right? He understands that this is the end of his life.
So he must have looked at it as a last chance to...
Last chance to take vengeance against the plishtim.
Right.
What's the problem with the Radak? The problem with the Radak is that if I were to have read this paragraph, see, I should have done this as an exercise. Read the paragraph without Pasuk of Bet. Read the story without the hair growing back, without Pasuk of Bet. And how would you understand Shimshon's tefillah?
He's asking for strength.
Right.
Without any other expectation.
Correct. When he says in his tefillah, it's a remarkable tefillah. Chazkeni na achapam hazeh. Strengthen me just this once. Seems to imply that in his own mind, he was not.
He had no expectation
of getting his strength back. According to the Radak, the moment his hair starts to grow, he says, oh, I'm getting my strength back. This is only temporary. And he knows this is temporary. We're going to be back in business. Which would be theologically remarkable. Right? Here he acts in rebellion against God, rebellion against his Nazirut. He throws off the mantle of his Nazirut altogether. And then suddenly his hair goes back and he says, okay, business as usual. We're back in business. Doesn't work that way.
And makes some tshuva in his own way.
But if I connect it to the hair growth, right, that his hair is growing again, and therefore he sees this as, oh, you see, my hair, my strength is coming back. So we're back to the sense that the strength and the hair are interconnected without any kind of consequence, and which is not what the tefillah that Shimshon offers, not what the tefillah sounds like. What the tefillah sounds like is that Shimshon recognizes that he's not going to get his strength back. He's not entitled to it. He uses the word not twice. It's a remarkable tefillah because it sounds like he's begging. Hashem Elokim, Zochreini na. Chazkeini na. Please remember me. Please strengthen me. Achapam Azeh Elokim. He uses three names for God. just this once. It doesn't sound to me at all like he's expecting his strength to come back because his hair started to grow again. You follow?
Mm-hmm.
So, from that perspective, I would offer, kvodobim komamunach, perhaps, the exact opposite interpretation of the Radak, which is that when the hair starts to grow again, what does it say? Vayachas sa'ar shol tzamech kasher gulach, his hair starts to grow, right? When you cut your hair, it always starts to grow again. What's the next pasuk? V'sanei plishtim nesfu lizbach zevach gadol adagon aloheim ulesimcha v'yamuna tan aloheim eloheinu b'yadeinu et shimshon aveinu. In other words, his hair is growing. We have no idea what the timetable is between this first story and the second story. But his hair is growing. Shimshon, therefore, you would expect to be regaining his strength. And in the meantime, what do we see?
They're all sacrificing
to the gods. They're making parties. Sport of him. He's sitting in jail. He's chained. He's a nothing. He's destroyed. We don't see any indication that his strength is coming back to him. And in fact, I would say on the contrary, that the whole point of the pasuk is that his hair can grow, but his strength is not coming back. Why? Because what we don't want to convey is the mistake that would think that the strength of Shimshon is inherently connected to the physical hair. The strength has nothing to do with hair. Where does the strength come from? That's it, right? Ruach Hashem comes from Hashem, comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam. His act of rebellion by allowing his nezirut to be cut essentially took away his strength, not because he cut his hair, but because he abandoned his nezirut. So to prove that, to demonstrate that, we have this image of his hair growing back, but not his strength. In other words, it's the exact opposite of the Radak. Radak is suggesting because his hair grew back, he saw that as a sign that his strength would come back. And I would suggest that I think in the context of the Pshat, the other possibility is that it's the exact opposite interpretation, that because his hair is growing back, we might think that he's going to gain his strength, but he doesn't, because the Navi wants us to know that it's not his hair that is the source of his strength, it's his loyalty to God. And he gets his strength back not because his hair grows, but because of his tefillah that he offers at the end.
So it's his tshuva, really.
It's his tshuva. It's his relationship with God, which is the source of his strength, certainly at the end, and not the hair. The hair is just a sign of the nezirut with which he began his life. It's almost as if Shimshon goes through two stages of nezirut. Nezirut from birth to the point at which Delilah cuts his hair, and that ends his nezirut from Minabeta. And then his hair starts to grow again, which is a sign of a nezir, which means that if his hair starts to grow again, it seems to indicate that he didn't cut it. Didn't cut it, that's also a sign of his nazir. So he's a nazir olam, he's a nazir from birth to death, but not in one consistent period of nazirut. His nazirut is cut in half.
But can I say something? The nazir from Nibetan is not, you don't have a choice in the matter.
He never had a choice in the matter in that regard. That's clear he didn't have a choice.
But he did get his hair cut by Delilah.
His only choice was to abandon his oath of Nezirut.
Right.
That was his choice. So he paid the consequences for it.
But Mibetan, he didn't, it was a given.
Correct.
He didn't have a choice.
That was unique to Shimshon. Correct. That we understood. But suddenly we see that he's not a Nezir from birth to death. That was the presentation of it when Esh Manoach said to Manoach that he'll be a Nazir min habetan v'ad yom moto. She was right in the fact that he was a Nazir min habetan v'ad yom moto, but not consistently. That Nazirut was split from min habetan until the engagement with Delilah. From birth to Delilah he was a Nazir, and with that Nazirut came his loyalty to God, and therefore it was accompanied with or by great strength. The strength was his tool that God gave him, imbued him with, because of his loyalty to the oath of Nazirut. Once he violated it, he started the Nazirut again. He starts his Nazirut again, only this time without the strength. So that's the beauty, that's the irony of it. It's not, that's the proof that it's not the Nazirut that brought him his strength, it was his loyalty to God. And therefore he's a Nazir here. He's letting his hair grow again. But it's not helping him. It's only when he turns to the Ribbono Shel'olam in Tefillah, Vayomer Hashem Elokim Zachreini Nevechazkeini Na, when he turns to God in Tefillah, then he's able to do something with the strength again. It's not the Nazirut, it's not the hair that is the proof of his strength, or the source of his strength. It's only his loyalty to God. That, I think, is the power of these two verses juxtaposed. His strength, his hair grows back, but not his strength, until he offers tefillah to the Ribbono Shel Olam. All right, we're going to stop here. The last piece that I want to do with you next, which will be next week, is sort of an analysis of Shimshon's role in this paragraph. We're going to do a little bit of a comparison between Shimshon and Yitzchak Avinu. Interesting. You can keep that. We'll, if you want.